Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more.
Dog Roundup.
Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johns coming to be live from upstairs studio. In studio without, I'm not in studio with, what? I'm in studio all by myself, but there are people on my computer screen. That's what I'm trying to say. Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
Sam Balch.
Yeah, that's great. Hi.
Did I get it right?
I mean, yeah, with a couple extra vowels in there.
Well, I just, if you're going to go with Sam instead of Samantha, I just think you... Hard. You deserve a couple more
syllables.
You deserve a bigger name. What's your middle name, Sam?
Oh, I have two, actually.
Of course you do.
Ooh.
My middle name is Marie Therese.
Samantha name. Marie Therese.
Hi.
SMT.
Yes.
And Tasha Johnson, my lovely bride.
Aloha.
So we're here at the Child Care Bar and Grill. Everybody's got a beverage, I hope. Sam's video feed looks like her microphone is 8 times bigger than the beverage.
It does. I'm having microphone envy. I'm feeling like we should have paused so I could go get my snowball microphone.
It's in a weird spot, so the microphone's like on the computer, but it's external. So it's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing. So we're talking to Sam because now Sam is a published writer.
Woohoo!
Sam, tell us about your...
Tell you about it. Listeners, I'm holding it, so I want you to imagine in your hands a glossy edition of Exchange Magazine.
Just pick now, wait, to be fair, they're all glossy.
No, this one's extra glossy.
Okay? Oh, extra.
Extra. She's extra. So slow.
So glossy. Number 252 is the issue. And I had the opportunity to, with a colleague of mine, actually, I guess two colleagues of mine, write about sort of the overarching theme for this month was global initiatives for children. That was like the spotlight of this issue. And I work with an organization called the Pedagogical Institute of Los Angeles, and their founder and director, Elise Schaefer Ivey, has founded across the world 5 different places that are called nests, and they are spaces for migrant children to come and play. So 2 of them have opened functionally down the street from me. I live in San Diego, if you don't know me, in Tijuana, Mexico. So I helped set up both of them. I have served...
Did you say down the street?
Yeah, functionally it's down the street from me. So I've served at 2 of them as a volunteer and then helped set both of them up a couple different times. So Elise wrote a really long, beautiful article just sort of explaining what the nests are and how they came to be. And then myself and someone I went to the nest with, who was also a coworker of mine, got to write sort of from the perspective of a volunteer about what it's like to go down to these environments and teach in them and learn in them. So
what's this coworker? Does this coworker have a name?
She does. Her name is Carrie Brewer. She's
okay,
great.
Well, I thought, I didn't know if we didn't like her and we weren't going to message her.
We are part of the Carrie fan club.
Okay, good. I assumed we were, but I didn't know if it was like, we wrote this together, but now we're not talking. I don't know what that is, but okay.
No, she is fantastic. So we actually were there together, which is one of the reasons why we wrote this piece together, is because we were there over the same stretch of time the first time we both went down.
So describe a nest to us and what happens at a nest.
I would love to do that because it's so great. The Nest is, so I'll describe to you the first one that I ever went to, because they do look like this sort of everywhere. So the first Nest, we call it Border Nest, is in a house that's being rented across the street from a migrant shelter. So that shelter across the street is way over capacity. So it is mostly just mattresses, wall to wall. There's a makeshift school for older children there. So it takes place in a school bus. There is nothing for younger children. So infants through age 6 or 7, there really isn't much for them right now. And that's, you know, just how it is running a shelter down there. So they do get fed, they do get housed, they get clothing in as far as they can. The conditions are, as if you've like heard me on the podcast before, you might have heard how I used to work at a homeless shelter in the US. So the conditions there are very different than you might expect, because the standards are different, the quality is different. The Nest is directly across the street, and it is just a place that is filled with light and just beautifully designed materials and furniture for children. It looks like a little house is what I would describe it as. It doesn't have a lot of primary colors or what you might think of if you typically think of a preschool. It looks more like a home. It's very warm. It's very inviting. There are multiple places for children to be. So there's a place that's very clearly sort of for dramatic play. It looks a lot like a little home. There's a place that's very clearly for a lot of different art exploration, because there's a huge easel and there's all these different paints that have been mixed, and there's a bucket full of clay nearby with clay boards and tools that you can use. Upstairs in this Nest that I'm currently describing is an entire space that's only for infants and toddlers. So that space has even smaller items. It's very, it has a lot of things that are on the floor for crawlers and pre-walkers and spaces for the parents to sit and engage with their children. You have to see pictures of it, really.
So infants and toddlers upstairs and nobody's like dying every day?
So they, no one is dying every day when the infants and toddlers are upstairs. Yeah, it's there are two gates. So there's one at the bottom of the stairs and there's one at the top. There is always the expectation that there are 2 to 4 nesters up there. So the nesters are volunteers, and I can get into how that works in a minute. And then the parents are always to be with their children when they're there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. So
we have a lot of eyes and ears there.
Yeah,
then.
So part of the program upstairs is parent education and parent involvement. So if their children are coming, then they're also coming.
Yeah, I can imagine if they tried to set that up in some parts of the States, they'd have to install an elevator. I mean, real.
Yeah, no, they probably would. Nope, and they go up and down the stairs every day. And the stairs, I should point out, are slightly crooked.
As still, all good stairs are.
And still, humans manage it.
Yes, humans manage. And I think that's... that's really part of what this is humans managing. Mm-hmm. And even going beyond that, thriving in situations that most of us thankfully have never been in, never will be in. But the way that this kind of links back to what a nester actually is. So in addition to volunteers like me, who I'm considered an international nester because I am not from Mexico. So international nesters will typically go, depending on the location, they'll either go for a week to 2 weeks to even longer. You can choose to stay for however long you want. And you work in partnership with local nesters, and they are adults that live at the shelter across the street. They are just people who live there, who a lot of them might have children that go to the Nest. And then some of the people I worked with were teenagers that wanted to do something and thought, this is a good thing to do. I'd like to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. So not only do they have something to fill their time with, but they also are gaining a lot of really great critical skills for when they hopefully are granted asylum to the United States and can eventually apply for citizenship here and stay here. And then they have, you know, a path forward for, even if they don't end up in education, they still have skills that involve working as part of a team and taking care of, you know, records and all of that. So the point isn't for us as international nesters to go in and fix things. The point is for us to go down as leaders and educators and be able to say, hey, we see what you're doing here. Let's talk about best practices in this situation. Let's see what we can continue to do.
I want to interrupt you. How hard is that for Americans to not go in and try and take over and be the boss of everything? Did you see any struggle with that at all? Any evidence of that?
The people I have been down with have not struggled with it. I will say, so I went down with my coworker, Carrie, and we come from relatively similar schools of thought on this. So this was, for us, we were kind of on the same page. And then when I went a second time this past January, the two people I worked with were also pretty gracious about that. I will say that the majority of people that go to the nests in Mexico right now, I'm actually in the minority. The majority of people that go are retired.
Okay.
So I'm one of the youngest people that's actually gone and gone more than once. It's usually people who are in their 60s who are going. And I believe we had someone who was in her 80s come down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she stayed a week. And these are retired teachers who love this, who want to do this, who are seeing this as a way to share their years and years of expertise with people that are going to use it to enact really meaningful change that will impact both sides of the border, you know, now and furthermore. So that's super, super awesome.
Are there any nests that are here in the U.S. for like a place of, I'm not sure the right proper language, so I don't want to like, you know, say the wrong thing, but like obviously the nests are kind of more of a temporary situation. Yes. So as they come up into the United States, are there like transitional nests where
there aren't, but that would be so cool. Like longer term, that would be incredible. The first nest I believe opened, and you can check on it's thinkwithus.org is Pila's website. I think it opened in like April of 2018.
Okay.
So they're relatively new. I will also say, so as of the time of recording, it is March of 2020. At present, due to the global situation, the nests are closed right now.
Oh, for reals. Okay.
And but something else that I want to mention with that is that, so the nests I've been talking about, the border nest, when they were told they were going to be closing for this situation, the local nesters, so the individuals that live in the shelter, went and asked, can we have some of the materials from the nest and some of the materials we have here? Can we set up our own little space for these children and keep doing this?
A secret nest.
Yeah, they're like, no, we can't go across the street right now.
And they said, no.
They were like, yes. Oh. Like, okay, if you want to set this up, you can. So they've set up, like, it's, there are pictures of it. It's in, you know, a little tarp tent, basically. And they've taken-
Pop up.
Yeah, they've taken what they've learned about how children play and how children interact with materials. And instead of having, you know, rows of desks for four-year-olds to sit in, they've got functionally like little centers of things for the kids to do and for them to keep going with these children and extending the things that they're exploring. So that was really like as sad as I was when I heard that the nests had to close, which is, you know, the safe decision right now. It made me feel
but
so
they
good
didn't
yeah and it feels so good about the work that's happening because the people who are part of it are hearing, you know, what children deserve and what we can offer them and are really putting that into practice at times that are tricky. Mm-hmm. So I love that. Like, that's why I'll shill for the nests forever.
Oh, even when you're the 80-year-old,
right? Be there with my cane.
That's awesome.
Okay, so now let's talk about Sam. How did this article come about? How do you go about getting an article published in that glossy magazine?
The glossiest of magazines. So the way it happened for me.
Why do magazines still exist?
come on.
Well, no, I mean.
It's great.
Don't rain on her parade.
The way this one happened.
Not her first parade. You can rain on the second parade, but not the first parade.
It's not exciting when the second one comes up.
Like a second kid. You're like, yeah, okay.
This one, Elise, so I mentioned her before, the founder and the head of all of this, had written an article for a different magazine. They had asked her about this work, and she wrote this beautiful many-page article that had pictures and stories about the nests and the work that the nest does and how it came about. And it's a fantastic article. And the first publication she submitted it to, I will not name who they are, passed on
it. Well, there's only three.
First one passed on it. And Elise said, you know, this is a really great article. I'm going to contact Sarah at Exchange.
Awesome.
Good. How she feels about it. So she sent it to, and so the editor-in-chief of Exchange actually had volunteered at a different Nest. There are
For reals?
Oh.
Yes, those were
really nice connection, ones. 1 degree of separation there.
Yeah, so that she had actually volunteered at I think Samos is the second Nest in Greece. The first one I think was in Lesbos and the second was in Samos, but those might be flipped around. So she volunteered at one of the Nests in Greece. So she knew about it. So she knew Elise through that connection and agreed to publish it and asked Elise, you know, could you get one of your volunteers that has been there to write about it? So in addition to your long form piece sort of about what this exists and why it exists, a piece about what you do when you're down there and why you do that so we can help you get more volunteers. So she asked me to do it and I said, this is the coolest thing ever. I would love to do that. So I connected with Carrie, who I went down with, and said, I would love to do this and I'd love for you to be a part of it since you were there with me. So we said,
right, so let's collaborate, right?
Yeah,
on a piece.
We sat in a coffee shop for a few hours and talked about, they gave us a limit on this one of about 1,000 words. So, which for me is very hard, as you can tell.
No.
Sam has all the words in her head.
Love words. that was a fun exercise in summarizing things to make it informational and also to make it poignant and interesting and get people to want to be there, but also not to exploit anyone who is currently living in the situations that we are describing. So it was a lot of work, but it's like Exchange is an incredible publication just for anyone thinking, who should I try and send my stuff to? They're very nice, walked us through all of the steps, sent us multiple different proofs of the article afterwards, told us about any changes they made, had us approve any changes, and then all we had to do was sit back and wait.
Well, it's a nice experience.
For a first time is definitely a nice experience.
So... what you've thrown out lots of names. Elise. Okay, so is Elise on lockdown too someplace?
I believe she is staying sheltering in place in LA where she lives.
Okay, so since you got that fancy new microphone, if you get on and do like a long form interview with her, I'd love to post that someplace.
I would love to do that.
Because since you've got that relationship, and that might be
just calling her right now. I saw her pick up her phone.
No, I did. I looked at my phone. I was like, I think I'm pretty sure I have Elise's number.
I just thought that might be a fun conversation if you guys both have time. That might be something people would like to listen to.
And she is all about getting this information out to more people, especially right now. Like I will shill for a moment for the listeners. Even though the nests aren't open right now, there is a concern about how this is going to impact the people we work with down the road. Right now, everything is okay. They're managing okay. But if the border starts to get shut down more frequently, how is this going to impact the supply of, you know, necessary goods like diapers and wipes and all of that? Mm-hmm. So there is a need right now for monetary donations or donations of things. There is an Amazon wish list on the website that can be sent now so that they have it ready. It's tricky. Right now, we're not super sure where things are going to go for any of us. And I know that's weighing a lot on the nests. But once things are better, and they will get better, listeners, don't worry. Once things are better, they're going to, you know, spring right back to it because the need is really great. And we're seeing the impacts it has. It's unbelievable, really. It's if anyone is even remotely curious when the nests open back up, if they want to go volunteer, like please read these articles, ask Jeff for my contact information, like do it. Yeah.
So I have a very typical Lisa Murphy business lens question. Is Nets trademarked? Is it copyrighted? Do they own this idea? Do they have a plan that other people who have the means and the resources can model perhaps in their own communities that where this might be of service?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I do not know the answer.
Of course it is.
I'm just kidding. That's something I would think of from my perspective. So yeah, I don't know the answer to that, but I can.
When you it's like a Shark Tank
long
question,
form interview.
Right?
That's a
right.
No, yeah. But for reals, I mean, because that's, you know, as you evolve in your career, you know, there's times when you're now rubbing elbows, so to speak, with people in that capacity to where, you know, the thing that person could do is maybe not open one themselves, but hey, I know 4 people in my community that would be willing to run it, and I have the resource, not me, but I'm just, you know,
right.
A scenario, that, and I have the resources to fund it. Who do I go to so I don't do something out of the goodness of my heart and then get slapped with some kind of a copyright trademark violation, you know, and here I was just trying to bring this service to the community. So yeah, that would be some follow-up information that I would love to get my hands on.
Yeah, I can, as soon as I find that out, I can let you know, because yeah. I know we've had, like, I've been able to talk with Elise just like a few times just about conversations sort of like that, like where does the nest go from here?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, 5 nests were opened up in the span of like a year and a half, and that's massive. So what happens after that is questions for someone way smarter than me.
Not smarter, just they have their fingers on a different pulse. Just a different pulse.
So you're going to, because Sam does this, she's going to send me links, and I'm probably going to remember to put them in the show notes to anything that's important.
Just to remind you.
So now you're a published writer. You got any plans for any more articles or anything?
Which is code for Jeff wants you to write a book.
Well, no, I thought that would be a segue into her next article that's coming out next time.
The next article, which was originally the first and only article, and now it's the second. That was also very fun for me when I was asked, oh, can you write this? Here's the contact information for the person. I was like, oh, that's Sarah at Exchange. Oh, that's that same person. So I was like, hi again.
Oh, I know her. She's my publisher.
She was like, oh my gosh, like, this is so great. So cool that this is the same person. I already kind of know you. So yes, I do have another article coming out specifically about working with children who are experiencing homelessness and transition. That is in the next issue of Exchange. So this is March, April. So that one is in May, June.
Well,
careful. This is going to be a series now. They're going to give you your own little column.
You're going to have a column. That's going to be pretty cool. So tell us a little bit about that one first, and then I got another question.
Okay, so that one was actually an article that Heather, very best friend of the pod, I would say.
What a nerd.
She reached out to me last summer and said, I have been asked to write an article about children experiencing homelessness, and I don't have any direct experience, but I know you do. And at that time, I had just finished working at a homeless shelter, working in a preschool that exclusively served children who were homeless. So I did have experience, and I said that she wanted me to write it with her. And I said, that would be so super cool. I would love to do that. So super excited. And she messaged me a little while later and said, because she has many wonderful, exciting things going on in her life, and said, I don't think I could write the article this semester. Do you want to just do it on your own? And I almost said no, because that sounded really hard and scary. And then I said, yeah, okay, I'll try it. We'll see what happens.
And now look at you.
Right. So many thanks to Heather for believing that I could do that, because I didn't really know if I could. So I wrote it and then submitted it to Exchange. And the way that worked is that I sent it to them. They have a whole page on the Exchange website that tells you what to do if you want to submit an article. It's really thorough, walks you right through it. Mm-hmm. So I submitted everything they asked for.
Turn on your laptop. Start typing.
And then I got an email and they said, yeah, we're going to publish this. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Did you get to use more words?
I got to use more words in that one.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
So I'm gonna interrupt, not because I'm an ass, but because I want to point out that what you just shared, you're going to go back like 2 minutes in what you just said, is a perfect example of working within somebody's ZPD and scaffolding. Like, it's I love to point out real-time examples, because I still think that's a phrase that people trip over, and they don't need to, because they're just overthinking it. So Heather had a relationship with you. Heather had this thing going on. Heather said, go and do this, right? Because so that is an example of scaffolding. I know what you're going to be able to do with a little bit of assistance. And the only assistance that was required was, go do it. I know you can.
Yep.
So.
Yep, that was exactly it. I'm glad you pointed that out, because
It's more words for you. You like
that,
words.
That can be another article.
Like words. Yeah, I love words. I just love all the words.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Is this something you're finding you're going to want to be doing more of? Is it an itch that needs scratching?
I mean, I love to write. It's something I enjoy doing. I like doing this sort of writing. I'm currently working on my master's capstone, which is becoming many, many words. So
how is it for you emotionally when people edit some of your words out of your baby, so to speak?
It's I'm getting better at it. That's more of my ZPD, is people knowing like we're gonna edit this and it's gonna be a little more clear and you're gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Yep, I'm okay. The message is still there. I'm fine. For me, I find that it's grammatically, I use commas a lot because I tend to talk like that. I write very similar to how I talk. And I noticed in both of these articles, some of my commas were cut. And I was like, oh, now that sentence feels so long. I'm like, that's just an entirely personal problem.
You know, I've noticed you don't use a lot of periods.
No.
She writes like I do. She writes like me. She writes the way she talks. It's a 200-page run-on sentence that somebody gets paid to clean up.
So, like,
you know what this needs? A semicolon.
Let's right, because it's cute. I don't know what its job is, but it looks kind of cute. Little winky guy.
A period and a comma together. Oh,
I think it's like when you should have stopped, but your brain said, nah, keep going. Like, I think that's the job of a...
going.
Yeah.
Let's just keep the thought roll.
Just take a breath. A semicolon means just take a breath.
In fact, let's see. I'm now going to pull up the article that I have in front of me. How many semicolons are in this?
I've got
an
important question.
Don't count them. That's not good pod.
Can we? Why are you calling your silly little writing thing for your master's a capstone? Isn't that disrespectful for stone carvers? Because stone carvers are artisans who work a long time to hone their craft, literally
they are,
hone their craft.
Which is why mine is silly.
And you're taking their word and using it for your writing thing.
I've appropriated masonry culture is what's
happening. Yeah, I think so. And I mean, stone carvers are pretty much marginalized anyway because we're not building a lot of cathedrals anymore.
It's a real bummer. I think I actually did ask this of another friend of mine who's in a different grad program, and she has a thesis and I have a capstone. I was like, is the difference you have to defend yours and I don't? And she said, well, I don't even have to defend mine. So
I think it's actually based on how you're allowed to gather your research.
Okay. Cause I wasn't, it hasn't been explained to me why it's a capstone and not a thesis. I'm just referring to it as a
and the kind of actual data that you're gathering, if it's, what's the word I'm looking for? How you can use, like sometimes you have to actually have numbers in like research numbers, this is not good. I'm having a word brain fart. There's two different kinds. Like there's language and then there's the numbers, anecdotal. And that's not anecdotal evidence, but it's the way that you're gathering your evidence. And one word has an L, which is language. And one word has an N, which is numbers, which is not done on purpose. That's just how we remember. But I think that kind of has something to do with whether or not you're like, I called mine a thesis, but it wasn't technically a thesis.
It was an action
research project.
I thought that question was going to lead to 5 minutes of sexy talk about stone carving, but it just led to that nerd stuff you guys just talked about.
Well, come on, look who you're talking to. Go carve your own stones, Jeff.
Oh.
Oh my God, I feel like such a dirt.
I do.
I'm a bad nerd right now.
Okay, well, we're going to end this. No, we're going to end this episode. any closing thoughts?
Thanks for letting me talk about it because it's really exciting. I will give Jeff the link to the article so you can read it. And if it resonates with you, great. And if you hate it, don't tell me that I can't handle it. I have a very fragile ego.
I told Tasha the picture you sent of you holding the cover. I told her you looked more excited than I did when any of my books were published.
It was adorable.
It totally made my day because I'm like, I wish I had feelings. I wish I could feel.
Well, maybe the stones will do that for me.
I kind of dig stones. No, we're really proud of you and happy we could be around to support you and
connect. I mean, let's look at that. I mean, the social media connection of, you know, the Wednesday night chats that gathered together when we met Sam and then met Heather, and then out of that, then they started connect. I mean, it all happened because of, you know,
it's
sitting down once in a week and having conversations with like-minded wizards, which is still what
it's
I like
almost
to call it.
It's almost like it's all about relationships.
I know.
Almost. Who knew it? Maybe Harvard should write a press release or something about that.
That sounds good.
Yeah, all right.
That's a joke.
This has been the Child Care Buyer Girl Podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode. Stay safe out there and wash your hands. Don't be like me. Wash your hands.
Don't be like me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.